Welcome back to Dr. Momcast. On today's episode, we continue our discussion on Linda Flanagan's book, Taking Back the Game, How Money and Mania Are Ruining Kids' Sports and Why It Matters. We took so many pearls of wisdom from the book, we had to continue our conversation. We talk about kids playing sports for the sake of playing sports and how to better communicate with our kids regarding goals for their sports participation. If only there was a quiz you could take to find out whether or not you're a fanatic sports parent. And if it doesn't exist, we brainstorm on how we could create our own.
This is Dr. Momcast, real moms talking about real science and real life. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Dr. Momcast. I am Dr. Marla Shapiro here with some of my favorite sports neuropsychology colleagues.
I'm Dr. Alyssa Wicklin.
I'm Dr. Beth Piras.
Dr. Summer Ott.
I'm Dr. Sonia Mosh.
And Dr. Lisa Nipolpaka.
I was thinking about the discussion with Linda, and one of the things that was striking to me was talking about why parents are so invested in their kids with sports. We talked a lot about scholarships and colleges, and I think Linda made a really good point about the parents' ego investment in their kids' sports. Coincidentally, I came across an article today. There's this great website called I Love to Watch You Play. The premise is the only thing you should be telling your kid is, I love to watch you play. Yeah. And not critiquing their play and not criticizing the coaches, just I love to watch you play. And so this woman, one of the creators of this website, I Love to Watch You Play, put an article out today. Her name is Asia Mape. I'm sorry, I don't know how to pronounce it. M-A-P-E. But she, title of her article was, My Daughter Quit Sports, and This is What Youth Sports Parents Need to Know. It was a really interesting article, and I'd love to talk about and get your feedback on, because I thought she hit a lot of really important points that piggyback about what Linda talked about and what we as clinicians who deal with sports parents address all the time. She has a few main points. And one of them was, we didn't listen. Her point was, kids say things that sort of tell you if they really want to do this or not. Her and her husband were both D1 collegiate athletes. And she said, our world is sports. And I think we all can very much appreciate that, because our work is sports. And then we have kids who play sports and we love sports ourselves. She said, when her daughter was younger, she said, Mom, I'm going to be an actor. I'm never going to be a professional athlete. And she said, she poo-pooed it, right? And she said, along the way, in retrospect, my daughter was telling me that she really wasn't that into sports, even though she was playing, in her case, water polo. There were these little hints along the way that I ignored. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. For a lot of us, our kids are saying, I'll join that club or I'll be that team, when they're not all that enthusiastic about it, or they're telling you that their interests are elsewhere.
So play devil's advocate a little bit, because I actually agree, but we also know how important it is to be physically active, and that so many of our kids are very sedentary. Where do we find the balance then as parents? On one hand, yes, we don't want to force them into things that really aren't what they want to do, but we need to keep them physically active and fit.
You're talking about two different issues though, right? Okay. She's talking about pushing your kid, that drive that you're going to get a collegiate scholarship, you're going to be, and when maybe that's not really what they want, that they do like the sport, they do like the friendships, and they like being physically active, but they don't like it as much as you think they do.
I wanted to read something, though. This is a really interesting perspective. You might characterize it as a justification, but this was from Florida Fast Pitch Forum. This is a Facebook post that really struck me as a way to think about it differently or reframe, whether we agree or not. But it says, people have always asked, why do you pay so much money for a kid to do sports? Well, I have a confession to make. I don't pay for my kid to do sports. Personally, I couldn't care less about what sport she does. So if I'm not paying for sports, what am I paying for? And it lists all these things. It's like, I pay for the moments when my kid becomes so tired she wants to quit but doesn't. I pay for my kid to learn to be disciplined, focused, and dedicated. I'm just reading a couple. I pay for my kid to learn to make and accomplish goals. I pay for my kid to learn what it takes, hours and hours, years and years of hard work and practice. Now, we all know that there's the downside to that, but sure. It was interesting. And maybe that's that person's justification, because they've been criticized perhaps for what they're paying.
One of the reasons that we all are supportive of kids' sports is the enormous benefits of sports, about failing, getting up. I don't think any of us have this goal for our kids to get scholarships or anything. So we are paying all this ridiculous amount of money for all those other things.
One could argue you can find those in other things, like the arts or other stuff.
Like to your point, Summer, I was into drama. And I went to auditions, and there's the same aspect of you get up, you try, you apply yourself, you experience failure, defeat. But those things, you could find analogies in so many other pursuits that are non-athletic. Yeah.
For sure.
I guess I was thinking about putting myself in the place of this mom and wondered, are they writing it because someone's criticized them for pushing their kids?
She wrote this article because her daughter quit water polo, was a very good water polo, apparently wanted to play the Olympics. Like that was what she was saying. And her daughter quit her senior year in high school. She said it was a gut punch to her and her husband because they were collegiate athletes. She had to take a step back and go, what did I do wrong? And she was very self-critical. I don't think she was trying to defend herself in any way. So she was trying to say, learn. And I think she even said something along this line, like kind of learn from me, ask these questions while your kid is still playing versus when your kid suddenly drops out. And she said it came out of nowhere from them. And maybe it shouldn't have come out of nowhere. Maybe if I had listened more. And she also said, it's a marathon, not a sprint. So when your kid says, I don't want to go to practice today, go, okay. Right? Like Linda talked about, let them miss a game. Let them miss a tournament. You can miss a game.
I'll admit that created a lot of dissonance in me. That'd be a hard thing for me to be like, you're not going to practice? Okay, honey.
And why do you have a problem with that?
I don't know. I guess it goes against everything I was taught. Dedication, pick yourself up. You don't get to determine if you're going to go or not go. I mean, if you want to quit, well, then you'll finish out the season and make a decision.
Right.
You know, it's just not how I was raised.
Yeah. But I think the point is that someone can be fully committed, wanting to play, but occasionally just need a break.
Yeah.
Physical, emotional. And that's, I think, more the point is not that you like half-ass it and go to practice here and there, but it's more of the kid just saying, I just need a break.
And she made an awesome point when she said, intrinsically, you are going to find more people motivated. So I totally see the side. It would just feel uncomfortable for me.
Yeah. Well, I also think that their parents, especially today's generation, perhaps they're so focused on doing it right and not screwing up. And they want to know exactly how to do things and not fail themselves as parents, because we all want to not screw up our kids too badly. So where do you draw the line? How do I know if it's okay to let them skip today? And what if they skip today and they want to skip tomorrow? How do we help parents that just want to do right by their kids figure out how to draw those distinctions?
Well, and then when the team says, you know what, then you're not committed, so you're not playing with our team. And being prepared for that reaction, because that probably would be a majority of people's reactions, because they need to know who's going to be there to practice for the team for the week and so forth.
Going back to what you were talking about, Beth, where she was basically, I was ignoring all of these signs. She was telling me she didn't want to play anymore. And we kept going on a more meta level. We hear this all the time. My kid was crying for help and I just wasn't listening. My kid was telling me they were anxious, depressed. They were having these social issues and I just wasn't listening. Going back to what you said, Marla, how do we navigate this? We preach, you start, you finish, you show up for your team. But when there's bigger things at play here, I think that has to be entertained.
Yeah. And I think it's a balance, right? My son plays ultimate frisbee. And one of the things we like about this team is you don't have to go to every practice. You can still play as long as you make most practices. It's a very reasonable approach. And I think as parents, we should be supporting teams and coaches who have a balance of sometimes you have other family responsibilities or community responsibilities, or you just need a freaking break.
Think about that as a culture of Americans. You know, that meme where the European auto reply to an email in June is heading off for summer break, will respond in September. The American auto reply is kidney surgery at noon, should be awake by 3, will respond by 4. You know? And because think about it, we don't do that. We don't take breaks ourselves, or we feel guilty, or we're going to suck it up and push through it. So we as the grownups aren't very comfortable doing that for ourselves. And so, of course, we're uncomfortable letting our kids do it. I love working with kids much more than adults because I think, no offense to present company, because they do tell us what they think. We just have to learn to listen and understand their language. Sometimes we just get caught up in our own stuff and expectations. What's the worst that can happen if you let your kid take a day off?
Nothing. Right.
But I think it was really vulnerable what you said, Summer. You said that would make you feel uncomfortable. And I can relate to that. If that's how you were raised, or we all have had experiences of you have to power through, And I think as a parent, it's hard to know, okay, missing one practice, that probably is a really good exercise, or missing a game is probably a good exercise. But you also have to teach them the lessons of diligence and commitment. And I think that's the hardest part, is that it is going to sound like a real psychologist, which I am, which is both things can be true, right?
Right, right.
But also being accepting of the consequences, because yeah. I don't know any team that my kids play on that a coach is going to be like, you're overwhelmed. You're going to run if you miss. Maybe you're losing your starting positions.
But maybe we need to talk about that. It's like, why is that a coach? I mean, your kids are what, 9 and 13, Summer? Like, it's yeah. insane. Wait, hold on. Right?
7 and 13.
7 and 13, sorry.
I had to think. Yeah, you are.
But it's insane that we're talking about a 7 and 13-year-old sports team.
Yeah.
That a coach is going to make you run because you didn't make a practice. You're like, gee, yeah. for God's sakes. I mean, that is, when you step back and look at it, is crazy. One of Linda's points last podcast was that so much of where we have come in sports is because as parents, we've accepted this. Mm-hmm. That we don't say, no, that thing was canceled. So we're just going to go have a weekend off. We've accepted this level of commitment from children. One of the points that Asia made in her article was, don't treat them like mini adults. We needed to start looking at kids as mm-hmm. kids. They're not small professional athletes. And we know this because we all work in sports medicine, is that one of the biggest issues we have is overuse injuries, particularly with sports specializations. There was actually just an article I read yesterday talking about the high number of basketball injuries, because basketball is now often played year round, and that their players are coming to the NBA as damaged goods with multiple knee surgeries and everything else, because they have been playing since they were 8 and they've been playing year round, and now they're 22 or whatever. So it's not only talking about the physical toll of treating them like little professionals, it's talking about the pressure that we have put on them. When ultimately, as parents, I think we talk out of both sides of our faces, because we go, oh, I just want my kid to have fun and make friends. But oh my God, you know, they have to play 6 days a week and go to camps and stuff. When you're like, why? What's the end game here?
I like the idea of, I love to watch you play, because I think you can still be at that fork in the road. I love to watch you play and I'm listening to you. One possibility is, I don't want to play anymore. The other possibility is, I love this and I want to practice 6 days a week. So if you come from the place of, my role here is, I love to watch you play, then maybe you're giving them the space to develop whatever path that is they may take.
But I think the important part is that as parents, we have this bipolar distribution. Either kids don't want to play or they're all in. Most kids are somewhere in between. They like the sport. They like their friends. They like the physical activity, but they don't want to kill themselves. They want to play video games sometimes, and they want to sleep in on Saturdays, and they want to just hang out.
We're running out of that in-between space.
Yes.
So,
yes.
And it's not just about the haves and the have-nots and the people that can't afford it. It's that middle ground. It's mm-hmm. sports for the sake of having fun and just playing sports.
We can't even plan vacations really anymore, because certain sports are all year, or they're going to have a camp in the summer, and they're not going to publicize when that's going to be. You're just supposed to like miraculously know and then cancel thousands of dollars that you've made, because the ramifications are so high.
But that goes back to, why are not enough parents saying no?
I know.
Like, we're going on vacation.
Right. Think about y'all whose kids play hockey. And what I see, unless you're really a leader, you're the oldest kids, you get really crappy ice time. We have these external structures of whether it's late at night or too many hours, or you sacrifice summer break, or you get up at obscene hours of the day for sports. And we wonder why kids lose interest, or why other things suffer. It's what happened to just sports for the sake of fun. And if you have to be practicing at 10 o'clock at night and your school starts at 7, is it worth it? I don't know.
Well, and it takes somebody to lead the charge too. I think it sets the culture. And
right.
we held our son out last year from traveling baseball. He was one of the stronger pitchers on the team. He had 19 missing assignments the last day of the try. And we messaged the coach and said, he's not playing in the first two games of the tournament. Like, I'm really sorry. Whatever the consequences are, the consequences are. And thank goodness the coach is amazing and was very supportive. Mm-hmm. And he still got to pitch. But What if he wasn't? He wouldn't have gotten to pitch. And that's natural consequences for not getting your work done, and substantiates that school's more important than sports, at least in our household. And we told the other parents, like, yep, his grades were crap. That's why he wasn't here. He was doing homework until 11 p.m. Friday night. And that now might plant the seed for somebody else to go like, huh, we can do that. And same thing with skipping practices. We skipped practice at 10 because he was tired.
First of all, I think you are amazing parents.
Yeah, clearly.
I really do. Honestly,
I only tell you the good part.
One of the things that is the ugly side of this general topic that made me uncomfortable, but made me realize I need to think about that discomfort, is we parents sometimes wear this sports over-involvement and enthusiasm as a badge of honor. It's kind of equivalent to socioeconomic status in some ways. I'm remembering this t-shirt that I saw a hockey dad wear at a tournament that says, "I can't," period, in all caps. My son has hockey. Just like, I can't.
Perfect example.
I can't go golfing. Yeah. I can't meet you at the bar. Can't have a social life. In our community, hockey is huge. It's an enormously expensive sport. The hockey fees are ridiculous. Most kids who play hockey, it's kind of a badge of honor. And I feel like in some ways, there's a prestige about being an elite sport parent.
For sure.
That it's not even about how well your kid plays. It's about that you can afford to give them this opportunity.
Absolutely.
And I think that's kind of an ugly side of this whole phenomenon.
No, I think you're 100% right. I spent $3,000 on your hockey. So you're going to practice, right? You know what I mean? There is that natural knee-jerk reaction of, I've paid a lot of money for this. Yeah. So you are going to play.
Like, oh my God, that those hockey skates are just ridiculous. I'm not going to get my roots touched up because of that.
My nails are haggard because you have hockey skates. Thanks a lot.
I have great roots because my kid plays hockey.
That's a good slogan for our merch.
But when we're going through these internal battles of, ooh, do I let him take a day off? Or is that too much? Because our public personas are wrapped up in it, does that make us less likely to powwow with other parents? Are those the dirty secrets we keep to ourselves? Because on one hand, yes, somebody has to lead the charge. A lot of parents like us are likely to confide these dirty internal angsty dialogues with other sports parents, or do we keep it to ourselves?
Well, if you've ever been part of Dance Moms and you don't bring the right Aquanet, you're getting shamed.
I was a dancer, Summer. I get it. Yes. You don't have the right shade of red lipstick. And God forbid, if you didn't buy the Danskin toast tights and you went to Target, forget it.
I did not bring the right hairspray and asked if I could borrow a squirt, and you would have thought the world was going to end.
Any sport parents listen to this, totally understanding that, nodding along to the Summer story at that dance. What is the advice then that you give to parents to say it's okay to say no?
You have to weigh it, right? If there are ramifications and you weigh the consequences, you're going to be more vocal about certain things than others. It's what you've invested. It's what your family culture dynamic is. I think it's going to have to be an individual thing for everybody, depending on the sport they play.
But I think you make a really important point. You said, what have you invested? And I think that's important because it's not about what we've invested. The sport is for the kids.
Well, I didn't mean financially, but maybe the time, and not necessarily when I say you, the parent, but the whole family unit,
right?
You know, what has been invested.
I think, though, that speaking up and speaking to other parents is key in terms of advice, not being afraid to say, time out here. My kid is fried. Or to maybe have those conversations with other moms. My kid has been coming home wiped. Has yours too? Maybe we need to skip a practice one day, or let's have a pizza party instead of practice. Speaking up for our kids, but also speaking out to other parents. One person speaks up can encourage others to do so.
Not be afraid.
Is there a self-analysis published somewhere, a checklist? Introspective questions that you could ask yourself to see if you fit certain profiles, and from there decide how much has this overcome you and or your athlete, your child, your family unit.
I think that's a really good question. And if not, I think we should invent it. On that topic, we talked about this book a little bit on the last podcast. It's called What Size Balls Do I Need by Steve Morris. And one of the things that I think could be a starting point is he suggests you continuously check in with yourself. what are my goals and what are my expectations of this experience? You ask your child the same questions. What are your goals and what are your expectations? And continually reassessing, maybe at the end of each season. It might be an opportunity to hear your child. I love watching you play, which is such a wonderful sentiment. Does your child still really love to play? And I think you'll find the parent expectation may be very different than the child, but we haven't talked a lot about just asking our kids directly.
I think that's a great point.
Can you expand on the difference between goals and expectations and give concrete examples for folks for whom that may not be quite as clear?
So I'm paraphrasing from Steve Morris's book. A goal, for example, would be what your child is striving for. And the expectation is the belief of what they should achieve. Your goal for your child may be that they end up on a top-tier baseball team. And your expectation may be that they won't miss a practice, they'll work hard, they'll work out with a trainer. Your child's goal, on the other hand, could be that they'll play baseball in high school and that they would like to be a leader on the team. And their expectation could be that they will practice, they will work hard, but they also want to take spring break with their family, for example. So you can see how those are different. Your expectation of how they will achieve that goal can be very different than how the child thinks they'll achieve that goal. And the goals can be different. Steve Morris talks about downplaying your own expectations, but continually communicating with your child to understand what their goal is and how they expect to get there.
I love this point, though. Listen.
So a set of questions would be so helpful. If you have so many points, right, then you're in the orange zone, or you're in the red flag zone, or you're in the I'm doing pretty dang good zone.
What's the outcome metric? So what are you looking for?
To inform the parent about, okay, maybe this is going down a path that could be very problematic. If they hit certain target behaviors or they're answering or endorsing certain aspects, okay, maybe I need to, and then they could be directed to certain resources or something.
Like you're a fanatic parent.
It's a great idea because sometimes those who are least equipped to make those decisions are the ones that really need to the most. So a concrete yardstick, to your point, Alyssa, yes, we should invent that, of how do you know if you're an over-the-top parent fanatic?
Mm-hmm. What kind of sport parent are you? And then it can you can be defined in a few different areas.
I also want to reiterate something that Linda said last podcast, was make sure that your kids have 5 things that they love, not just I'm a hockey player or a soccer player or whatever, right? But I also love drawing and I love my kitten. And I think that's such an important message. As parents, are we also encouraging interest outside of sports? Because we want to see what they're naturally drawn to. And if we are narrowing their lives, they're going to miss those other opportunities. And so I loved the notion of thinking about other interests. And this article I'm talking about by Asia, she talks about that. When you're talking about a child leaving a sport, like at some point, everyone's sporting career ends. And she said, with kids, we call it quitting. But no one is saying Tom Brady quit football. He retired. Our kids can retire. It's not quitting. And they found another interest.
People should be more celebrated, for example, in professional sports when people have had to walk away for their family or for their health, mental and or physical.
Yes.
That needs to be more celebrated. And those vignettes need to make the news more often.
Andrew Luck was the quarterback for the Colts and he had some injuries and just said it was time for him to walk away. His heart wasn't in it anymore. Even though he was still playing at a high level and he'd recovered from his injuries, he just didn't want to do it anymore. And we got a lot of grief about it. But you think, do you know how hard it is to be an NFL player? The toll on their bodies? He was just looking out for himself. And Simone Biles said she needed a mental health break.
Yeah, she actually started not doing her routines in the middle of the Olympics. She was sitting out and everybody was speculating. And she very quickly came forward and said, it's mental health. It's dangerous for me to do these things when I'm not feeling 100%. Solid.
She's a hero. That is amazing.
Absolutely is a hero.
Let's work on getting her as a guest.
We should be doing the same thing for our kids. Mm-hmm. Our kids tell us sometimes they need a break. And we have to go, okay, good.
And I'm relieved that my daughter said, Mom, group sports is not for me.
We can also model it in our own ways, maybe not through our sports, but also through saying, time out, I need a break today, or I need to pause, or I need to step back. Or as Linda said, sometimes you just don't go to every game or every practice. And we can do a lot to start modeling that ourselves and to be the change we want our kids to be.
I've skipped one game a week since I read that book.
Yes.
Which means I've still been to about 5 to 6 games per week. But we got to start somewhere, right?
Yeah,
that's right. I think if our kids are in sports, to Lissa's point about asking them, ask them, what do you love about playing sports? Hearing from them. And if it's all the healthy stuff, I like spending time with friends and I like being competitive or whatever the case may be, versus things that seem like they're trying to please a parent or they're just doing it because it's the expectation. I think Lissa's point is right on, is that sometimes we have to stop and just ask them.
And be ready to hear their answer and accept their answer.
Yes.
And pay attention to how you feel when they give that answer. If your hockey player says that they are super passionate about art and it makes you go, oh no, they're not the problem. You might be the problem.
That's awesome, Lisa. That's a great point.
One of the things that I was thinking about as you guys were talking about this, how do we help them? One of the resilience building strategies in life is to find meaning and purpose and being authentic. My son, hockey, 5 years old up until junior year, senior year, joined drama. Hockey is done. His hockey's in the rearview mirror and the thousands and thousands of dollars are in the rearview mirror. Uh-huh. And now we're going to plays and stuff. So one of the things that we talked about during that transition was being true to yourself, being authentic.
Right.
What do you find meaning in? What makes you feel like the best version of you? We're modeling it when we ask those questions. We're modeling it by asking them to have that dialogue in their own head. And then we're helping them come up with the answers.
To Lisa's point about listening to your own reaction to it, what if you have been a parent who said, no, you're good at hockey and
spent too much money.
Yeah, we spent too much money on hockey equipment.
Those are the kids that get injured and look for a dishonorable discharge from sports. That's the ones that you're seeing take too long from an injury.
Right, right.
Yeah, Beth, I think to your question, I would say we need to get over ourselves. This isn't about us, guys. This is not about us. Let's get over ourselves.
And that's hard. That's hard.
You know?
So hard.
It's hard and painful when you lose a community. You lose that community of parents that you sat in a freezing rink with for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. So there's grief and loss. Face it. Look at it straight in the eyes. Look grief and loss in the eyeballs and say, hello, friend. This is going to suck and we're going to sit in the suck together. And now I got to make drama parent friends. So acknowledge the reality of the loss. It's hard and scary.
I wonder if as a parent, we assess our goals and expectations and keep reassessing, would that not be such a slap in the face?
Well, I think at the end of each season, if you could do a parent self-analysis, your child could do an analysis. We've learned through the junior high process that my daughter is much more comfortable as an individual sport athlete than she is a group sport athlete.
Sure.
And it took experience and discussion for us to realize that and being accepting of that. So moving towards that, and that all happened because of analysis and thinking about what is she comfortable with? What is she good at? What does she want to do?
Do you guys remember those quizzes in Cosmo? Like, what kind of lover are you?
See, that's kind of sport parent. We have got to put a tool together.
Yes. What kind of sport parent are you? It just reminds me of those. And then you'd flip. That really dates me. But you'd flip the few pages and see like, oh, I'm all A's. I'm this kind of lover. But you could it could be in the sport parent realm.
Yeah. You have to do that voice, Alyssa?
Yes.
I love it. She's just like, I love it.
And if you got like the boring missionary lover, you'd go back and change your answers to get something.
I know.
Yeah. I mean, I never did that, but I'm sure somebody did.
Oh my God. Is that where we put a fork in it and how can you stop that?
Yes. What a great discussion.
I think it's a great discussion because I think so many sports parents are going to hear this and go, yep, I know that person who wouldn't let me have some hairspray. I know. Yeah.
I know the person that made me run my ass off for, you know,
missing a practice.
I think the ultimate takeaway I'm hearing is we need to start the discussion.
Yeah.
In order to change the narrative, we just need to start the discussion because maybe other parents feel the same way.
In order to change the narrative, we need to start the discussion.
Hashtag Dr. Momcast, you'll see it on a t-shirt.
Yes, there you go. No, but seriously, that's so spot on. And we also need to stop saying what's in it for me.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Get over ourselves.
It's not our journey. Beth, thank you for bringing that up and helping facilitate that discussion. That was fantastic.
Yeah, we're all doing the best we can, guys.
Real science, real moms, real life.